Word on Today FM.
It's time for the last word on travel, and we're back to doing our restaurant specials, our going to picking cities, our locations around the world, where Russell Alford, co-restaurant critic with the Sunday Times, one half of the Gastro Gaze, can tell us all about. So we have two locations today. In a moment, we'll talk about Lisbon in Portugal. But first, Bologna in Italy. Is Bologna the home of Bolognese?
Yes, that's right. So this is very much a culinary capital in Italy. It is part of the Emilia-Romagna region.
Put it on the map for me.
So it's kind of like, if you think Rome, over towards the right and just a bit further north there. So when I went to Bologna, I flew into Milan and got the train down. I decided to do a little 10-day exploration around Italy, because until 2022, I'd actually never been to Italy before.
Kidding.
Yep. Me, a foodie, never been to Italy before. So I decided that if I'm going to go, I'm going to go heavy. So I did 10 days and I did Bologna, Turin and Milan all in a very short space of time. I ate well, let's just say. But I was glad of the end of pasta by the end of by getting back home.
You can have too much pasta, can't you?
You can indeed. So I wouldn't recommend what I did, but I would recommend Bologna. It's a very, very lovely city. Very classical in its style. There's lots of towers that have been built over the centuries that are gorgeous to see, but I'm there for the food. And some of the kind of traditional things that they have dishes such as you mentioned, Bolognese. Now there it's more served with tagliatelle as opposed to spaghetti. That's a very much like an American anglicised version of it instead.
And they call it tagliatelle al ragù.
Yes. And this is the combination of the ground meats, which is usually a combination of beef and pork, lots of vegetables. The sofrito, which is carrots, onion and celery all together.
Slow cooked,
usually for a couple of hours instead of that kind of quick. It's not designed to be a quick dinner in the same way as a spag ball would be when you make it at home. It's slow, takes a while, and it's really lovely and tender.
Do they put as much tomato sauce in it as we would tend to in this part of the world?
It's not as tomatoey, at least the ones that
which
I had.
Which is better so, isn't it?
It's meatier.
And less of throwing sort of sweetness of the tomatoes in there.
Or dare I say ketchup, which some people will do, which is fine if you want a bit of sweetness in it, but they definitely don't do that there, that's for sure. One of the things is there's a great appreciation for higher quality ingredients, with Italians being so proud of their produce and their agriculture and their land. There's great quality products there. If you think of like, you go to a market in a lot of parts of Europe and you have a tomato there, it's like something you've never tasted before. And Italy is like that in that way.
So go through other dishes to try. What about tortellini in brodo?
So this is a pasta dish that when I visited Northern Italy, this was one I loved and is one of the only ones I didn't get put off by having every single day. So it is small tortellini, which are the small pastas, kind of like shaped like little circle wrapped around
itself. Sort of like little shells.
Very much like little shell there, yes. And they're usually filled with pork, ham, mortadella and Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. And it's served in a broth, usually made with veal bones, pork bones and chicken stock as well, all together. And it just is a really rich filling. Now, because of kind of the secondi and the main dishes, you'd have a pasta dish specifically in between other pasta dishes quite often, which is quite fantastic if you're a pasta fan. And this was always one that you'd have kind of before your main in particular. It's light, it's refreshing, but it has that beautiful meaty flavour from the pasta. You wouldn't be putting cheese on top of it or anything. It's designed just to be very elegant with the broth and the pasta.
And getting away from the pasta, tell us about mortadella.
Some people slag me off when I say this, but this is adult Billy Roll in many ways.
Sorry, what's Billy Roll?
You've never had Billy Roll before. It's the ham kids would have that's shaped like a bear.
No.
Nope. Okay, Google it. It's fantastic. Now, you'll like a mortadella. Now, this is a kind of a cured pork sausage dotted with lots of bit of pork fat and pistachios and peppercorns throughout. You can see it's gorgeous looking. They're very proud of it in mortadella.
Cold, is it?
It'll be served cold, yes, as a sliced meat that you'd have maybe on a cheese board, an antipasto platter to give it its proper title. In sandwiches as well, fantastic. I've had a couple of pizzas in Italy in particular where, you'd have a couple of slices of mortadella, you'd have some pistachios and stracciatella cheese on top, and I still dream of how good it is because it's amazing. I eat packets of mortadella of an evening because they're fantastic. It's a great, great
but
dish.
This is a big area, isn't it, for cheese and ham?
It is, it is. So you've got the Parma ham, which is made in Parma, which isn't too far away. If you do what I did and you travel between cities on the trains, which are fantastic to use, you will go through Parma. And the Parma ham or prosciutto di Parma, that is made in the area as well. And that is obviously very gorgeous. Parmigiano Reggiano, as I mentioned, it is one of the greatest cheeses in the world. It has protected status in this area. And it's made in two particular zones of the Emilia Romagna area and the Lombardy region as well. And Grana Padano, which... I know you may know that you can't have Parmigiano when you are a vegetarian because animal rennet is used in that. But Grana Padano is a good alternative because there's no animal rennet in the process of making it. It's very, very similar. It's a bit milder, creamier and crumbly. It's fantastic.
Okay. Quickly, give me recommendations of places to go and eat that you found in Bologna.
There's two I'm going to tell you about. One is a restaurant, one is a bar, because I was only there for, I'd say, the briefest part of it. So I ate a lot in small places here and there and drank a bit as well. So Oltre was a restaurant, really modern cuisine that's very much, or modern takes on traditional cuisine. So you have a lot of these like tortellini and brodos, but they're just elevated and haven't given a modern twist to it, served with the likes of natural wines and a really, you know, dance music playing loudly in the corners. It's not a very traditional trattoria, is that how it's pronounced, in Italy. Really beautiful place. That is called Oltre, O-L-T-R-E. Kind of in the more affordable end of things, Sfoglia Rina is called as S-F-O-G-L-I-A-R-A-R-I-N-A, sorry. And that is a pasta shop, restaurant. It's been there since 1963 and they do a mix of things that are both very, very traditional on one front and using the seasonal ingredients, and they get very adventurous when it comes to the seasonal ingredients. There's often a queue outside of this place. It's very, very popular, but it's fantastic. And there's also a bar that I love telling people about called Bar Senza Nome. And this is a bar that's staffed entirely by deaf and hard of hearing people. You pick up a card on the wall of whatever cocktail you want. You hand it there. There's lots of sign language. If you do understand, have any sign language yourself, use it there and they'll do their best. It's a fascinating experience communicating without communicating with your voice.
I tell you, we're not going to have time to get to Lisbon on this episode. So I just want to finish by asking you a couple of more questions in this. First of all, did Bologna live up to your expectations when it came to finding Italian food?
Yes, I felt Bologna is the place I would go back to in a heartbeat, just because of the quality of the ingredients that I had there, as well as I think as a city, it's very easy to navigate as well. And finding nice restaurants, there's marketplaces, you can walk down some lovely alleyways in the centre of the city and find some really traditional but really great vibes. It's a young city, it's a university town as well. So it's very good atmosphere there. And yeah, I'm dying to go back. Ryanair fly there a couple of times a week and it's very handy.
And one final one, and this is left field, right? But particularly when you go to somewhere in foreign countries, and if you go somewhere like Italy, if you actually look at a menu, say if you're outside a restaurant trying to pick a restaurant, would you be like me in that I would turn around and usually say, we're not going there, because any place that has the food in pictures rather than describe it, is going to be a place that's not going to be of good quality.
Yeah, this is me. Now, there's a few reasons why I can't stand it, because often there'd also be a waiter standing outside of the menu trying to coax you in. If you're trying to coax me in, I'm not probably going to come in.
Yeah.
But there is a thing that if English, or in this case Italian, is per se not your first language, it's an easier way of understanding what the dishes is, which I have, you have to agree.
But a good restaurant will actually have it explained well in English for you without having to put up a picture of something which in itself probably won't look great, but also may not resemble what you actually finally get out in your plate.
And it never resembles what you get on the plate in the end. No, I would usually steer clear of those types of places. Though I have, over the years, I have found one or two, in Korea in particular, a lot of photos, and I was very glad of them when I was there. But as a rule of thumb, probably not.
Russell Alford, thank you. I promise we'll get to Lisbon the next time you're with us. Co-restaurant critic with the Sunday Times and one half of the Gastro Gaze. Thank you so much for being with us.
The Last Word on Today FM.